Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about my BJJ journey and what I've learned.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Shintaro has also done BJJ, and then he's actually a brown belt.
Brown belt,
that's right. So, and he's met a lot of interesting people, especially because he was going through the New York City BJJ circuit.
Yeah, and, New York City BJJ is pumping.
Mm-hmm. So right. He has some cool stories, and then we're gonna kind of quickly go over them, and then later we're gonna talk about what he learned, you know, from his BJJ experience. So let's start from the beginning. So how did you even get into BJJ? Like, what motivated you as a judo guy?
So I knew a guy in my neighborhood, right around my parents' house.
Right.
Right. He used to do BJJ, and he invited me. He's like, "Hey, I'm doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I know you do judo," and this is like probably when I was 20, so probably like 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like when you're in college,
yeah.
So I was like home from college. I was in Westchester,
right?
And then my friend's like, "Hey, I've been going to Jojo Gaworen School, ECU, East Coast United," and he's like, "Why don't you come on by?" So I decided to go with my friend, and it was a very warm welcome, and I was very surprised to see everyone started on their feet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I was like, "Wow, this is like judo. It's almost the same thing, right?" I didn't even know what it really was before, you know.
Right, because back then
I just knew that they did Niwaza. I just knew that they were good at Niwaza.
Uh huh.
And I was like, my Niwaza is not good at all.
Mm-hmm.
I've neglected it.
Mm-hmm.
I just never liked groundwork.
Right.
I'm like a stand up person. I like stand up.
Yeah.
So I went.
So then, you put on like your judo gi and then just went with them? Like, how did they receive you?
Yeah, I brought my judo gi, I brought my judo black belt, and they were like, "Hey, welcome, you know, come on in, and you want to work out?" And it was pretty great.
Nice.
Yeah, and then they all started on their feet, so I started on my feet, and, you know, we did some judo, and then, you know, we did some Niwaza, and it felt very, very familiar.
Right. And then did you consistently go that summer, or...
Yeah, so I went, and then I was so impressed by Jojo Gaworen's jiu-jitsu, right? His Niwaza was unbelievable.
Right.
He kept doing this arm drag, and he was so slick with it, and the way he attacked multiple attacks, right? I wasn't used to that.
You know, right.
Triangle choke armbar. And it was like, "Oh, shoot, which do I defend? And I haven't really felt that before. Of course, this is me with zero BJJ experience going with a BJJ black belt.
Right.
He was running a school at the time. I was very impressed. So I was like, "You know what? I'm going to go." And then next class I went, I brought my white belt. I brought a white belt.
Nice.
As
a student.
It was really cool. Yeah. And the people who weren't there the first time, they were all so nice to me, and they assumed that I was a white belt. And we were doing I remember we were doing single legs, and I was wrestling in college at the time.
Right.
And there was a guy, he was like, "Oh man, let me show you how to do a single leg." And he was like showing me, and he was super nice and super like excited to show me. So I was just like, "All right." And then I let him teach me a single leg. And he's like, "Give it a shot, man." And I was trying it. And of course, my single leg is great. You know, I'm wrestling in college.
Right.
And he's like, good job. But, you know, your hand should be like this. And I was like, "All right." You know, and it was kind of nice really just being a full-blown student.
Right.
You know?
So you kept true to your, you know, the dojo etiquette we talked about.
Being a student. And, you know, after he found out all this stuff that I was a judo black belt and I wrestled college, he was like, "Man, why didn't you tell me?" And it was like a funny thing. We became good friends.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So it was like a summer thing for you. When you're home, you would just kind of go stop by and then train a little here.
So I went in, walked in as a judo black belt, and then I walked the next day in as a white belt. And it was like the next day or the day after or something like that, that the instructor said, "Hey, you know what? We're going to start you off at blue."
Right.
And that was my first...
Blue belch,
yep.
Yeah, nice.
And then I went for the summer. You know, I was back home from the summer. And then I was going to college in Manhattan. So when I went back to college, it's like now I couldn't go train, you know, there because it was in Westchester.
Right. Westchester is the suburbs of New York City, Manhattan.
Yeah, it's probably like 30, 40 minutes north.
Yeah.
And between judo and wrestling in college, it's like I couldn't fit in jiu-jitsu.
Right.
Even if I wanted to, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Right? Morning lift, wrestling practice, then judo practice. And
I see.
Where do you train jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. then, so you kind of, that was put on a hiatus a little bit, and then...
Hiatus, yeah. Some, yeah. you know, a couple years went by, and then, mm. you know, I took the summer to go to Henzo Gracie's because my friend Harry St. Leger, who's out in, right, with the Jacksonville in Arizona, right. he was training there. He was like, why don't you come on by? And I started developing a relationship with Brian Glick and those guys because I was doing seminars, judo seminars at BJJ schools.
I see, I see.
Yeah, so I was kind of getting familiar with them, and they kept inviting me. So I went, and I spent the summer training in the blue basement with John Donahue, and he gave me my purple belt.
Oh, so you're a Donahue purple belt.
Like, yeah.
So wait, so that was like a summer after college? Like a, just one summer after college? Or is it
that, was a, that was probably, yeah, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a summer where it was like... I was still in college, maybe. So it was probably like 3 years after I had that first experience for the summer. Right.
I see.
So BJJ was kind of like a summer thing for me because I wasn't really wrestling in the summer.
Right, right, right. It was just judo.
There's no summer. Yeah, in the fall, you start your preseason.
Right.
You wrestle. Season ends in April or you know, March. And then you spend 2 or 3 months kind of still obsessing over it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God damn it. I didn't, you know.
Right.
In conferences or something, you're still training. Uh-huh. And then in the summer, it just kind of fizzles out for me, wrestling.
So and it's then, like a BJJ kind of replaced wrestling in a way in your grappling training.
A little bit
training.
For the summer. Yeah, in that time summer. Period.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I have a purple belt and, you know, I feel a little bit more confident about my Niwaza.
Mm-hmm. How, yeah. So I know Donahue is like a legendary figure in the BJJ community.
Yeah.
So how was your experience like with him? Like I know he's known for his pedagogical like style and, you know, his death squad, you know.
I was so blown away because he wanted to have conversations about judo with me.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying, hey, did you see this match with this guy when he did this Kojigari? And I was like, what? How is he familiar with judo?
Uh-huh.
And he was saying stuff about judo that I haven't even heard. He was like, this guy, that guy. And I'm like, oh my God, I haven't even watched that or heard that. And I was blown away by... Right. And then there was a little office in the back where, you know, sometimes I would go in early just to hang out with Harry and talk to Brian Glick. And I would see him in the little office watching videos, like judo videos and studying it and watching matches. And I was like, wow, this guy really is a student of the arts.
He's a true scholar.
Yeah. And the way he taught was amazing, too, because he's very verbose. Right. My father didn't really teach. He's like, do. Right. Mm-hmm. And then he would give some feedback, but a lot of it is figure it out yourself kind of a methodology.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he was very, very explicit in the way he taught, like, do this with your hands, do that with your hands. And, and I was very impressed by that.
I see.
So yeah, it's harder to do that for judo.
I think,
because balance is important and coordination is very important. If you don't have the coordination and balance, you just can't do it.
Right.
Right? But if you're on the ground, it's like, put your hand here. Anyone could put their hand there. Right. Mm-hmm. Take the hand off like this. It's like, okay, yeah, like that. And then when you see the tension across the sleeve in this way, you know you've done something right. Like, yeah, I could definitely see that.
Mm.
As opposed to judo, it's like stand on one leg, pick him up on your back. It's like if you can't balance him there, you can't do it.
That's an interesting point. We can talk more about the like kind of your experience in BJJ and then in contrast to your judo experience. But yeah, that like it seems like because judo is a standing game mostly, it's it's more intuitive than like cerebral. Like BJJ, I think it can you can approach it as if, like a cerebral art.
Yeah, I think the speed in which it's practiced and the intensity in which it's practiced changes that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we're gonna get into that a little bit too.
So right?
Because when things are a little bit slower, you could actually break down and analyze and see all the different options and see all the different methodologies and as opposed to judo is just fast, boom, boom, boom. It's like, what happened? It's like, I don't know what happened. The guy just grabbed him and threw him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the stuff that actually happens is you can't see it. You need the lens to be able to understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Donahue, you know, so did he have a team then? Like the whole death squad thing? Like his prodigies?
No, that wasn't really a thing.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I know Brian Glick was in the room and he was incredible.
Uh-huh.
And there were great people in there. I remember Gregor Gracie being in the room and subbing everybody, you know, and all that stuff. There were great, great athletes in there.
Mm.
I think this is pre-death squad.
I see. So it's like Donahue was just starting out his whole school
and
thing.
I've been back since that summer
Uh-huh.
here and there, right? Gary was going and I would go and I spent a couple of weeks going to the comp class because mm-hmm. I had time on Tuesday morning at 10, mm-hmm. things like that. And, you know, every time I go, I got something out of it. And right. I would always try to show whatever I knew if someone asked.
Nice. Right? Nice.
That's etiquette, too. I'm not going around like, hey, let me show you my tile, you know. Not doing that. But if someone wanted to learn it, like, yeah, I'm more than happy to show wearing, what I know.
Wearing your purple belt. Purple belt. Yeah. Yeah.
Wearing nice. My purple belt and, yeah. you know. I visited Marcelo's, right? Because
oh, Marcelo's too, yeah.
Bernardo Faria was coming to my dojo to train judo.
All right, because...
This is more recent. I'm jumping yeah. ahead a couple of years because he was mm-hmm. last world championship thing. And he's like, I want to work on my stand-up game. So he was mm-hmm. coming to my dojo for 6 months to a year.
It was so cool to meet him, you know, because he lived like two blocks away from the
yeah, you,
dojo.
Yeah, you were around for that.
Yeah, yeah. I went to Newaza with him. He's so nice. Like... Of course, he's gonna yeah. kill me. Nice yeah, yeah, on the ground. But he'll let me work on my stuff, and yeah. I will go stand up with him. He'll go hard standing up. Yeah, yeah.
He came in. He's like, yeah. "Hey, I actually live two blocks away. Like, you guys do judo here?" I'm yeah. like, "Yeah, come on in."
Such a nice guy.
Judo. Yeah. Yeah. yeah, he did some newaza, and then he invited me to Marcelo's. He's like, "Come on by to Marcelo's." Mm-hmm. So I went for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Marcelo's nice. Is in Manhattan too.
Yeah, it's okay. On 30-something street.
I see.
20, yeah, it's pretty close.
Also, it's they're like all clustered within, in our right, yeah, in Midtown.
Certain radius. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so in Bernardo, like you even showed up on his instructions, I remember.
Yeah, so I'm doing like judo fanatics and BJJ yeah. fanatics. And in between that time from my purple belt with Donaher, one of my judo students got a BJJ black belt. And mm-hmm. he gave me my brown, and that's kind of how it is. And
I see that. So that yeah. that's when you got, so before, yeah, so it was like between Danaher and Bernardo, you got yeah. your brown belt.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you?
But like, yeah. it wasn't a result of like me going to a school and training for the right. summer or training for X amount of time. It was one of those things. One of my guys got a right. black belt in jiu-jitsu and then he gave me, it was one yeah. of those guys. Yeah.
So you're plugged into the community and all and everyone. You yeah. and that kind of situation.
And you know, because yeah. we do judo at the yeah. dojo, and that's what we're known for. Like a lot of jiu-jitsu guys would come all mm-hmm. the time.
Right, people right.
would come in. Hey, I'm from out of town. Like I'm a BJJ guy. I saw your video on YouTube. Can I do jiu-jitsu? Or hey, I'm training for this thing. I'm a purple belt. I'm a black belt. And so people are always dropping by with jiu-jitsu experience.
Right.
And during that time period, you know, when people would come by, you know, pre-COVID and everything, it was a great opportunity for my judo guys to do some new. And we do a lot of newaza at the dojo, as you know.
Right, right.
So, like, these guys would come in, and my guys would be able to work out with them on the ground and work out with them on standing and things like this. It's a great little synergistic thing.
Yeah.
You know, good relationship.
Did you ever compete in any kind of BJJ competition?
Yeah, I did. I fought in two. Yeah. Tournaments and yeah, did good. I won.
Which division? Like, I know they divide up by like belts.
Yeah, so there was one tournament I fought. It was like the Good Fight.
Yeah,
it was like in New York and like TGF, it was called. And then it was like the advanced division, but they weren't like black belts, like you know,
I see. It's like a local tournament, yeah,
advanced heavyweight division or something like that.
Uh huh,
and then I won that.
Nice.
They put me in the heavyweight division. I wasn't even that heavy. I was really big.
Yeah.
They gave me the option too. They were like, you could be in the under, you know, 200 or something, but you'd be in like an intermediate, or you could go a little bit more advanced.
But heavy, yeah. I see.
And I was like, I'm going to go with the heavy guys.
This was with Danaher? Like the whole crew?
No, this was with Jojo Goran's team.
Ah, okay.
So I was a blue belt, I think.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So I fought as a blue belt. I was fighting like purple belts, I think it was. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
I think that's an appropriate level. You just started out.
I remember my second match. Yeah. I go out and put my hands on the guy. And I hear one of his friends yelling, "He does judo!"
Did he pull guard after?
No, the guy's like, "What?" And then I like already had gone in for a hurrah.
Oh, you did all right. Nice. Yeah. That's funny.
Because that's what I, as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh man, this guy's going to pull guard. Might as well go for something.
For something, right. Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you know,
it was a fun experience.
Yeah. So you're like very much part of the New York BJJ scene with the Gracies, the, what'd you say?
Bernardo.
Yeah. Of course. With who's Bernardo's teacher again?
Marcelo.
Okay.
You ever heard of him?
Yeah, I've heard of him. Definitely. Marcelo. Yeah.
Yeah, Marcelo. He's famous. And, nice. Yeah, it was an interesting, you know, ride so far, and I learned a lot during that time period. And like I said, a lot of jiu-jitsu guys come through my dojo.
Right.
So it's perfect. We have a jiu-jitsu brown belt now on the mat with us. So Joe, he's great.
Nice.
And now Brian Glick, we haven't talked about him. He was one of Donaher's first black belts ever. Mm. And he is, you know, I think like Gary Tonin wrote a post, like he's one of the best black belts ever in this world that no one really knows because he's never competed.
So that he's the, for those who watch Shintaro's videos, he frequently shows up on Shintaro's videos and they train still like they're in a kind of pod together.
Yes. Yeah. So even during the pandemic, like we were in our little quarantine bubble situation, and I really trust him because he's a great guy, and I'm in my little bubble, and I'm very, very diligent and vigilant with the masks and stuff. So we were exchanging privates. You know, this goes back way long too. Like during the course of this whole experience that I've been telling you about, we'll every now and then meet up at the New York Athletic Club, and I'll teach him judo for an hour, and he teaches me jiu-jitsu for an hour. So we've been exchanging this kind of a thing, and we've been working out together for years and years and years. So that like always added to my jiu-jitsu. And if I had a question, this guy is just such a jiu-jitsu savant, right? So it's like if I had any question, he could just clarify it. He was super concise. He was super eloquent. Like all this stuff about him, he's just an incredible teacher. And you know, I hope he feels the same way about my judo. And I've been teaching him judo for a little while too.
Right.
And, you know, he's had other judo gurus as well, right?
Yeah.
Like Gary had a hand in teaching him, and Tamok and all these guys. But yeah, that's a long relationship. And right now, like I'm kind of getting into it too. Like we've been pretty consistent for the last 3 or 4 months. So my jiu-jitsu game has definitely been increasing.
You think you're going to try to get your black belt in BJJ too?
Yeah. You know, if he wants to like reach out to me and just like, hey man, I think you're at a level where you're definitely deserving of a black belt. Here it is. I definitely won't say no to that. And I'm open to it. But it's like, that's not my primary objective.
Right.
My primary objective is to choke George whenever I feel like choking him in the dojo, you know, because he's such a, his defense is so good.
Right.
And such I just a strong love guy. Learning the jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And I always tell my guys too, it's like, let not the belt be the end goal.
Right.
But let it be like a side effect of your learning. Right. Love to learn, love the process, love to come in, love to hang out with the guy, love to choke, armbar, whatever, learning, learning. All of a sudden your belt is darker and darker. Right.
Right.
And that's kind of the mentality that I'm trying to have with it. Of course, it'll be nice.
Right.
It's like a marketable thing, right? It's
double black belt.
Coral, judo, and, you know, BJJ black and sambo. It's like, that's nice.
Yeah.
But it's really not on the forefront of my mind when I go in.
Yeah. Right? We'll see what happens on that front. So
I don't want to be the guy that sees Brian once a week. It's like, what do I got to do for my black belt?
Right?
Do I need to learn the Baron Bolo? Like, I don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah. So you've had, you have a very open mind for BJJ. Not just an open mind, you are actually a student of the art. And so let's kind of go through your experience in BJJ and then contrast it to your judo experience. So first and foremost, like, what do you think about BJJ as a judo practitioner? Like, what's the, you know, is it, you know, they're closely related, but, you know, there's definitely differences. So how do you see it? Yeah.
So with judo, time and nuance is very limited.
Right.
And there's a discrepancy in the way we train Niwaza in judo versus how it's actually applied in competition. And I always talk about there's a martial arts judo and there's a sport judo, like Olympic sport judo. And it's very important to distinguish the two, because if you're looking at sport judo, you're playing judo or fighting judo under the rules of the IOC, the IJF.
Right.
Right. And if you're looking at it from a martial standpoint, it's like, okay, judo, morotegari, kataguma, are those things still judo in a martial art standpoint? Yeah, they are. So the way we do judo in a martial setting is different from the way we do sport judo. But what we mostly see on the online, the highlight reels and all these killers on the mat, and you know, the most marketable thing about it is the international IJF circuit.
Right.
So when we're watching that kind of judo and we're looking at the niwaza there, like you see people missing a throw, turtling on bottom, right? Missing a sumi, and then being in open guard, and then
kind of stop
having that transitional niwaza. Yeah. Right? And that's where it's at. Mm. But when you look at a practice, like a judo practice, and we're going into niwaza, all right, partner up and do niwaza, we bow, and then we just start niwaza.
Mm.
Right? Very rarely do you see the transitional side specifically trained. They did that in Jimmy Pedro.
I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's why they had so much success with that.
Right, right.
Right? So there's a big discrepancy there.
Mm-hmm. So, so in terms of judo niwaza, like you think... I think it's safe to say you will definitely recommend BJJ to improve your judo niwaza. So
yes and no.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yes and no. Because if your goal is to do judo, compete judo successfully, right? What are the niwaza positions do you see in judo most often? Right? I go tomonage.
Mm-hmm.
I fail. Now the person's in open guard in the top position.
Right.
Right. You have 5 seconds to improve position or it's stopped right. Go back up to your feet. So this idea of, okay, shin to shin, he goes there, de la hiva, that, go put him on his butt, de la, you know, baron bolo, all the stuff like that stuff just will never exist in judo because
there's not
the
enough time
it takes to get into those scenarios, it's just too long. Like the referee will never allow it to go continue.
Right.
So spending a lot of time doing that is not very useful. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to do judo and compete in judo and using BJJ to enhance that.
Right, right.
Right? But stuff that you could do in BJJ, like attacking the back, right? If it's fast and it improves position and it keeps creating motion, like something like that could really, really benefit the judoka.
It's like quick guard passes or off the back attacks.
Even quick guard passes might not be useful because in judo... you don't get rewarded for passing the guard.
Right.
Right. You get rewarded for passing the guard and pinning the person.
Right. Right.
Right. So as soon as the quick guard pass happens, the judo person can turn their back and give up their back because you don't lose points.
Right. 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 I see.
Getting pinned, you'll lose points.
Mm-hmm.
Giving up your back, you don't lose points. So it's in the best interest when you do a quick X pass to just go to your stomach.
Right. Right. Right.
Right. So now you're in this position. It's like, yes, you're giving up your back in sport judo, right? Oh, you're susceptible to the choke. But all you have to do is keep that position for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds. The ref's like, okay, done. Back up to your feet.
Right.
So it's in the best interest of judo people to fight that way and train that way.
Mm. So,
but will it make you a better martial arts practitioner, a judo practitioner?
Yeah.
That's a different story.
So in that, so for those judo practitioners, judokas who don't necessarily want to focus on the competition side of things, what do you think, how do you think they should approach BJJ?
Because I think they should learn BJJ, you know, almost as a separate art, right?
Right, I see.
And it's very important because if you're looking at, for instance, like the pinning idea in judo, you hold them for 20 seconds and you win. Right? Simple as that.
Right.
But if I'm practicing with the goal of improving my groundwork, period, as an overall grapple, as a martial artist, pinning someone down for 20 seconds is nothing.
Right.
If we're doing a 5-minute round, I pin him 2 or 3 times, that's a good portion of the match that we literally did nothing.
Right, right.
Right? So pin the position, pass the guard, pin the person, hold them for 10 seconds, and then transition to something else, or even look for submissions from the pinning position, right? Judokas don't look for submissions from the pin position.
Right.
They just simply don't.
Yeah.
Because that's the end of the match when you pin them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you kind of have to look at it like that.
I see.
Because the rule sets really, really makes a difference. Mm-hmm. So if you're a judo person and you want to compete in judo and you want to learn guard passes, a lot of the guard passes are completely useless for judo people. Because it doesn't lead to a pin. It doesn't lead to anything that gets rewarded in terms of points.
Right.
So the over underpass, or what Jimmy Pedro calls split the legs, that's the best because when you go for it, you pressure, you control the hips and the legs. While you're passing, as you're passing, the person is being prevented from going to their stomach.
Right.
Which you're leads controlling
the hips.
To being, rewarded by osaikomi, by the pin.
Right.
So you're a judo guy. You want to do BJJ to improve your judo competition game. You go to a Brazilian jiu-jitsu school. And if they're teaching over underpass specifically, that's good. That'll help you. But if they're only doing quick passes, not really going to help you.
I see. So you are a judo competitor as well as like you're a martial artist. So how did you approach BJJ? Like what did you try to get out of it and like throughout your journey?
Well, this is the thing. Yeah. Right? While I was competing, I had no knowledge of this stuff.
Mm.
I was just kind of, I was really clueless. And, you know, I wish I knew all the stuff, right, that I know now.
Yeah.
And I wish I had someone, you know, like me to kind of teach me some of this stuff when I was up and coming.
Mm.
I didn't. So for me, it was like, oh, jiu-jitsu guys are good at Niwaza. Mm. I'm going to go do BJJ.
Right.
My Niwaza is going to get better. Right? Mm. Oh, look at this ankle lock. Ah, I can't use that in judo anyway. I'm not going to learn it.
Right,
oh,
right.
Look at this thing that we do with the wrist. Ah, I can't use that in judo anyway. Mm. Right? Let me just try to learn the stuff that is semi...
judo applicable.
Judo-ish.
Yeah.
And something that like I really liked was a knee cut pass. But it's like, boom, knee cut pass. And then it's like people rolling out to their stomach.
Right.
Never scoring from it. It was very frustrating.
Right, right, right.
And I never really made that connection until I went to Jimmy Pedro's, and Jimmy Pedro was obsessively making everybody train back attack juji and over under pass. Back attack juji, over under pass. Back attack juji, over under pass. Right?
Right.
It's like person drops Ippon Senagi, back attack juji. Person misses Sumigaishi, over under pass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Got it.
I see.
And then, you know, you see guys like Bernardo Faria who specializes in the over-under pass.
Mm.
And then when he was coming to the dojo, I was like, Bernardo, please teach me that over-under pass.
Right, right.
And he's like, okay, if you teach me drop Senagi.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you got a deal, you know?
Yeah. Nice.
So little by little, like it started shaping together.
I see.
And now I kind of have a good understanding of it. And I wish I had this understanding before. But, you know, now I'm not a judo competitor. I do judo specifically for the martial side of it.
I see.
So you'll see even now in the dojo, you haven't been there in a while, but I'm doing a little bit more.
On the nail side.
Stuff. That's, you know, even like the body lock stuff, the upper body lock, Greco-Roman throws. Like in judo, in sport judo, you can't connect your hands behind the person's back.
No bear hugs. Yeah.
No bear hugs, but we're doing it. We're learning it.
Nice.
And I specifically say you can't do this in competition, but it's good to know this stuff because we're trying to be grapplers. We're trying to be martial artists.
I see. So it's like the stuff we talked about in the, you know, how to find your own judo system. You're exposed to all of this and then you internalize it, interpret it in your own way.
Yeah.
And then kind of try to be more expansive in your view on the...
Yeah. You have to loop it back to your own goals always.
Yeah.
Right? And people say, hey, is jiu-jitsu good for self-defense? Yeah, a lot of it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not purely self-defense.
Right.
Because being in a niwaza position where you have the person's back, like that may not be the most conducive thing, right, if you're trying to defend yourself against multiple attackers.
Right, right.
Right? Also, like, for instance, give you another example, like the deep half position, right? Really bad if you get punched in the face.
Right, right, right.
Can't really go for it, right? Deep half is not so good for that.
Mm.
You know, or even like the seated guard, when one person's standing in like sort of a upright position looking for these fast passes and things like that, and you're in a seated guard, like if you get kicked in the face, not very good.
So your goal throughout your journey kind of changed. At first, you're a judo competitor, try to find stuff that you can apply to judo from BJJ. But that as you become more of a teacher, a martial artist, like you're focusing more on the martial side of things. And now you're really approaching BJJ as an art. You're trying to learn it more as a holistic way, I guess. Not just like something you can use for judo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what's going on. Hey, man. How are you? we have a leak in the house, so we got a plumber coming in.
Oh, okay. We'll cut that out. Hold on. We'll just wait.
It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah.
We need to cut it. Try to be as authentic as possible on the Higashi and Peter show.
Yeah. Right? Well, all right. So let's see.
Sometimes your pipes leak, yo.
We don't. It's a pandemic situation. We don't have a dedicated studio or anything like that. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So now let's flip the script and then I'm curious about what you think about how BJJ people can approach judo. Like, you know, I think a lot of times A lot of times they just kind of say, oh, you know, I don't really learn about takedowns at my BJJ school. Can we just, can I just show up to judo? Like, I see that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, you can, but you need a very educated instructor to be able to do this.
Right.
Right. And it's the same idea with the judo, with the BJJ. Mm. On the reverse side, I actually made a DVD about this called Low Risk Judo for BJJ Players.
Mm-mm-mm.
Commonly, you go into a judo school and it's like, hey, I'm here to do judo to help my BJJ game. The instructor goes, okay, let me show you a turn throw.
Right.
Probably one of the worst things you could start with.
Because, yeah. Well, can the you elaborate? Curve, yeah. Or learning curve. Yeah.
Takes a very long time. Once you get your turn throws very, very powerful and skillful, it takes a very long time to get there.
Yeah.
The more powerful it is, the harder it is to stop.
Right, right.
But in the beginning phases of learning it, it is not powerful at all because it's not very intuitive.
Mm.
And then every time you go for it, the consequences are high because you're giving up your back. You put yourself in bad position every single time you go for it.
Right, right, right.
Right. So you really shouldn't start by trying to learn these massive turn throws because they're not really going to help you.
Mm.
In your game,
right? So you it's the same way, like the how you approached BJJ as a judo competitor. If you want to improve your takedown because you want to become a better BJJ competitor, you have to look for those things that actually apply better. Yeah.
And if you look at any dojo, they're probably going to teach you osotogari first.
Right,
Teach you osotogari in an upright position,
mm.
which you'll see in judo now more because there's no more leg grabs because, like we talked about, Olympic judo, sport judo doesn't allow leg grabs.
Mm.
When you're not allowed to do any leg grabs, you're going to be a little bit more upright. And if any sort of negative judo where you're not actually going to throw somebody gets penalized, you're going to be more upright because you want your hips closer to be as offensive as possible.
Right.
So if you're learning judo and osotogari in that context, and now you're trying to bring it back to Brazilian jiu-jitsu, everybody shoots in on the legs, so their defense is a lot lower, right? They don't get penalized for negative judo or negative throwing where you're going away from the technique, not offensively throwing somebody.
Mm.
Naturally, you're going to have people who are just trying to strip the hands off.
Right, right.
Back down and then keeping the hips low. That osotogari that you learn in judo, not going to work.
Right, right.
So you need an instructor with the knowledge to be able to say, okay, how do you apply this in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Some people can just sort of analytically make this kind of a connection right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
How can I take this osotogari? How is this applicable to my Jiu-Jitsu style?
Mm-hmm. I see.
Some people could do that. Mm-hmm. Most people cannot. I was never able to do this, right? So now all of a sudden, you know, you can ask your instructors, like, is this going to work in Jiu-Jitsu?
Mm-hmm.
And then if the judo teacher says, yeah, of course it's going to work in jiu-jitsu, just do it like this.
Right.
You know, then maybe the guy doesn't know.
Right, right, right.
Because you just don't know what you don't know.
So it has to be nuanced. Yeah. Right.
It has to be specific.
Yeah.
Right. And if your jiu-jitsu game every single time is being in bottom position, sweep, get the points, pass, get the points, and now work from side control, and that's your entire game. Going for a big turn throw is not going to help you in the least bit.
Right, right,
because you want to be in that bottom open guard position. Right?
Right.
So now you need to learn a tomonage sumigeishi where you put yourself in that position. When you fail the technique, then now all of a sudden you could go into your position. Right?
I guess that's a good way to do it because, you know, if you just learn a turn throw as a BJJ player, and you might get frustrated. You might just give up the whole thing about learning judo altogether.
Yeah, and I made this mistake many times.
Yeah.
Right, jiu-jitsu guy comes in, hey, I want to learn this thing, you know, judo to help improve my takedown game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, let's start with grip fighting and let's start with a nice little aggression situation.
Right.
Not knowing, you know, at the time, I never really made that connection between this might not be effective for the people who are trying to do it in their own context. Because it's a different context. And if you're unfamiliar with BJJ, how are you going to be able to make these two things work together?
Mm-hmm. So that
it's the same idea as like the wrestler that comes in and goes, I want to work on my throws.
Right.
I don't know. There's no Greco-Roman places, no freestyle places. I just know collegiate wrestling. I want to learn how to throw somebody. Can you show me? Okay, come on in. Here's how to do a taitoshi with two hands on the lapel. It's like there's no lapels in wrestling.
Right, right.
How do you account for that? Oh, just go for an underhook and a wrist. Okay, is it that simple? You know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Depends on the level of the guy's wrestling.
Right,
if you don't know wrestling, you're not really going to be able to help them.
Right. So So it's a very important for the instructor to know a lot of these other arts too, because you want to help other practitioners too that are interested in
if
judo.
If that's something that the judo instructor wants to do, then it's important for them to know.
Right.
But some judo instructors are like, hey man, I do judo, I teach judo, that's it.
Mm.
In judo, you can do this, you can't do that, and this is how we live and die by it.
Right.
We're doing this judo, right? And if that's them, that's God bless them. They're allowed to do that. That's their right.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a jiu-jitsu guy. I want to learn stand-up. Okay, you could learn our judo. That's it.
Right.
Some people are like this.
So nowadays, knowing what you know now, when the BJJ guy comes in and is like, hey, I want a better takedown game for my BJJ. What do you usually show for the first time?
Well, so this is general. So I had this happen to me maybe 3 weeks ago too.
Right.
A guy who wants to do a private. And then the first thing I ask is, what belt are you in jiu-jitsu?
Mm.
And what is your jiu-jitsu game?
Right. Oh, so you try to personally tailor it. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to personally tailor, especially if it's a private.
Right, right.
Group setting is different because it's like, I'm going to teach this during class. I don't have time to figure out what you do and differentiate the instructions just for you if you're only here for one class.
Right, right.
It's not fair to the Peter Hughes that come 3 times a week, to the Peter that comes 4 times a week, who I'm emotionally and just overall invested in.
Yeah,
I care about them.
Right? Right.
So the guy that comes in for a group class, you know, oh, let me pay my mat fee and then let's try it once. Hey, sensei, I know this is a group class, but can you dedicate your entire session to me and making my jiu-jitsu better? I'm like, get out of here with that. No way.
Right, right, right.
I'm not going to help that person, generally.
Right.
And I will. I'll give them maybe one or two things. That's it. They can take it or leave it. Maybe they can do something with that information.
Yeah.
But it's not really on the forefront of my priority list.
Right. What I want...
Private lesson is different, right? Because it's me and him. And it'll always start with a conversation. What belt are you and what's your jiu-jitsu game?
Mm-hmm. So what, and then you go from the, maybe you will show Sumigaeshi and Tomoenage first, and you go from there.
Potentially.
Yeah.
So the other day I asked this question to this guy. I said, hey, what are some of your things that you're successful on your feet? What are some of the things you feel comfortable doing? And what are some of your issues?
Mm.
Issue number one was there's a lot of wrestlers in my jiu-jitsu school.
Mm.
They take me down.
Right.
What am I doing wrong? All right, let's grip fight a little bit. And then he was going for the lapel with his lead leg, which means he's not really protecting his lead leg. And a wrestler, that's a wrestler's dream. To be able to duck and shoot, go under the arms, because arms are the first line of defense.
Right, 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 right.
Right? So that was number one. So it's like, hey, don't reach with your lead leg, reach with your other hand, which happens to be the left hand.
Right, right.
Right? Punch the hand in. Now your lead arm is protecting your lead leg.
Mm.
Let's start off with that. What are some of the successful throws that you've been hitting?
Mm.
What sort of side combination that you showed me last time that has been really working well for me?
Mm.
How can we diversify on that? You know, and he had a Muay Thai experience, so he's used to some of these foot sweeps. He's used to the movement of the sasai.
I see, I see.
So I said, okay, you put sasai and dayashi together, it'll work really well for you.
Mm.
But if the jiu-jitsu guy is crouched down real low, it's going to be very difficult. So let's work a snap down.
Mm.
Let's work the sasai. Let's work the dayashi. And then now you could start really developing your technique.
I see. I see.
You know? Yeah.
That's, this kind of systematic approaches, I think it's very important. So let's switch gears and let's kind of talk about... So having gone through all, you know, trained with all these like premier BJJ schools from around New York City, what are some of the things you think judo, especially in the United States, can learn from their success of these BJJ schools?
I think the barrier of entry is very different from judo and jiu-jitsu, and the learning curve is different.
Right.
When you're starting in judo, the impact is really high. And when you learn osotogari, the consequences are real if you fall wrong or reap the knee the wrong way.
Mm.
Jiu-jitsu, you learn closed guard, opening the closed guard, consequences are low. Anyone and everyone can potentially do it.
Right, right.
Right? So the barrier of entry is a lot different. And I think that's one of the really important pieces.
Mm.
And because of the nature of the technique with judo, there's a lot of balance, coordination, and force that goes behind it. Not everyone can do it right away. And like I said, the consequences are high. In jiu-jitsu, it's very, very different.
Right.
Right. People, it's a little bit slower. The pace is different. So now when you're looking at something like the simple arm bar, right, you're looking at a hinge joint, right, lever arm, fulcrum, applying force, and then the elbow goes in the opposite direction.
Right, right, right.
Right. It's a lot more intuitive. And people, when they learn this kind of stuff, it's much more easier to explain So the pedagogical side, when people explain these things, they have a much more eloquent way of presenting this information,
which is
a lot more easily digestible for the person actually learning it.
Right.
As opposed to judo, it's like stand on one leg, do this, do that, keep your balance, keep your core tight, reap this knee, the person has to fall, do kemi, blah, blah, blah. Okay, try it. It's kind of hard. Okay, now do it live.
Right.
When was the first time you hit an osotogari in live after you learned it?
Yeah, because I remember like when I first learned judo throws in Korea, like doing all these uchikomis, and when they first put me kind of, threw me into even nagekomis, I was kind of scared. Like, I didn't know.
Very scary.
Yeah. It's just...
Yeah. Getting launched.
There are so many... You're throwing the whole body, and you know, like you said, there are multiple... It's not just one joint that you're focusing on. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. And think about how long it takes, right? Like I just said, osotogari from the time you learn to actually hitting it live versus thinking about actually learning how to open a closed guard and actually being able to do it live. Probably the same day if you're like relatively athletic.
Yeah, yeah.
But humans are good on staying on their feet and they're athletic. You play every single sport, basketball, baseball, football. The first and foremost rule is stay on your feet.
Right.
And so a good athlete comes in, they're used to taking things.
Regaining
in
balance.
Yeah, reading and keeping the balance and keeping the knees bent and being strong, right? Anybody and everybody could bench, right?
Yeah.
Keep the person away. Right, it's hard to throw somebody.
Right.
Open, so, closed guard, and you've never done closed guard before, and now a lot easier.
And that kind of immediate feedback. Yeah.
Immediate feedback. And what's the consequence of someone opening your guard? Ah, he opened my guard.
Right.
What's the consequence of someone slamming you a osotogari when you just learned the breakfall?
Huge. Yeah.
Huge. They're not coming back after that.
So what are some of the specific things that you've done to lower this barrier of entry for judo?
You know, I still do teach osotogari sometimes, right?
Right.
Depends on, right? And I don't let these guys do live, Randori live.
Right.
And I explain to them up front, right? I try to manage their expectations. Like, hey, we're teaching you osotogari. This is how you do it. It's not going to work yet. I guarantee you. It's not going to take a long time to actually do this on somebody. Because there's a lot of, you know, skills before you're going to be able to do it on a resisting opponent. First and foremost, you have to be able to make the shape of this throw.
Right.
Second, you have to throw a cooperating opponent. And then only after you master those two, then can you graduate to throwing a resisting opponent. That's months from now.
Right.
And once I tell them that, they're like, oh, I have to be able to make the shape of the throw first.
Right.
Because if you show them osotogari, and if they expect to be able to do it, they're not going to be able to do it. I guarantee it.
Right.
On a resisting person. They're just not. So
manage the expectation.
Manage the expectation, be upfront with it. Does this work in live? Can I throw somebody right now with it? No, you can't.
Right.
you can't. Not for a while.
Yeah. And another thing is, you know, that kind of immediate feedback is also important to, you know, keep the students engaged. How do you structure that or like account for that? Yeah.
Well, so, you know, like if they're learning osotogari, it's like, hey, I'm cooperating. I'm letting you throw me. Just remember, right? Like we're going to go and then we get taken down and then, hey, good job.
Right.
Kind of like this, right? And then having someone experienced to be able to guide them through it. It's like, what am I doing wrong? Mm. And having the person who knows, right?
Right.
Most common thing in osotogari, when you're going into osotogari, you pull yourself in this direction. Inadvertently, you're taking the other person and pulling them in the wrong direction. I'm pulling myself over here.
Yeah.
Cool. Person lean in the opposite direction, and then you're trying to throw them that way? Right, that's a very, very common mistake that 90% of people make as a beginner.
Right.
If the person teaching that technique doesn't even know that, then it's like, all right, now you're behind.
Mm.
Right? The person's not going to learn it.
Right.
So having students know, right, is huge. And like I always talk about, man, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most difficult thing about martial arts, I think. It's getting a little bit more philosophical, right?
Right.
And it's kind of like going, looping back to the BJJ stuff. Like, I always thought, you know, judo niwaza is great. Until you see some of these BJJ guys doing niwaza, and you're like, oh, that's like a very good version of the judo niwaza over there, you know?
More so,
you just don't know what you don't know, right?
Right. I see. All right. So then, that kind of stuff. And, it's interesting that I think you told me that, I forget who, but like a BJJ school, like they don't even let white belts or students do live rounds until like way into their game or something.
Yeah. I mean, live randori is like everyone who does judo think like, oh, that's the golden cornerstone of judo. Why would you do judo without doing randori? It just doesn't make sense. And that's coming from the perspective of the people who've survived already. So it's, there's survivorship bias there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if you can't handle randori, you know, you don't deserve to be on this mat. It's like, man, but you know, you got lucky. You never got injured. You had good people. Maybe you were athletic, right? You shouldn't have that kind of a expectation for everybody. Like, everyone's not the same, right? The 45-year-old accountant that sits on the couch all day or whatever it is at a desk all day, that guy should have the ability to learn judo in a safe way without you being like, oh, you got to do randori. You got to get slammed.
Right.
And I think that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu.
I see.
Anyone can do it, right?
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not saying anyone can do it at the highest level. I'm not saying that. But the barrier of entry is very low.
Yeah. We talked about this in other episodes, but yeah, that's kind of how do you make it in judo? You know, it means it that's different for everyone. And, you know, we shouldn't be
different from everyone,
condescending to people who may not be able to compete or do live rounds as much as you can. Yeah.
Also, on the topic of learning what judo can learn from BJJ, BJJ is a marketing machine.
Right.
Think about all the isms in BJJ, that it's just really penetrated all the martial arts world.
Right.
90% of fights end up on the ground.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
Right? But they can really sell it. Fights, what percentage of fights is one-on-one?
Yeah.
Think about that in a self-defense setting.
Right.
What percentage of fights is multiple person versus one person? In that case, you go to the ground, you're going to get stomped.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's a marketing machine. And there's nothing wrong with that. Right? It's a marketable sport, marketable martial art. They should be. Right? If you look at the BJJ world, it's like you could have a blue belt masters 3 division, and that person gets on the podium in front of this beautiful thing, and then they get to put it on Instagram and feel good about it, and they have a lot of support and love from each other, like, hey, congratulations, you're doing amazing. You know, judo, you could win a regional tournament on the Northeast, you know, a D-level, national-level thing, the Liberty Belt Championship. You're standing on milk crates, you know, in a dingy gym somewhere, like a high school gym that they rented out. Yeah. And then the volleyball team's like rolling in, you know, and judo tournament cake all day. And, you know, the jiu-jitsu guys really thought this part through.
Right.
You don't need a regulation mat size in order to do a full-blown event. Like, you don't need... that type of space.
Right.
Jiu-jitsu's got it skilled. It's like, okay, 10 matches going at once.
Right.
What about weigh-ins? You know, oh, it's kind of a pain in the ass to do weigh-ins. You step on the scale, boom, weights are good, go on the mat, compete, right? 2:30, you're competing, you do it, you could go have beers with your buddy, you could have dinner with your friends.
Right.
Judo tournament is not like that.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a good product. The judo tournament is not a good product. The local judo tournament is not any way, shape, or form a good product.
So it's not just about...
The business side is so much more refined in the Brazilian jiu-jitsu world. You know, and that's something that comes from... I mean, there's money in the sport now because it's such a fast-growing sport.
Yeah. It's crazy how...
Judo can learn from this. And the judo people are not really taking on these ideas. And why can't we step on the scale before we go in so we don't have to do morning weigh-ins?
Right.
Why can't we give a 5-pound allowance?
That's the dog.
Why can't we fight in a smaller mat space so we could have more matches going on at once?
That's the most dull part of the judo competition, kind of weigh in and then waiting around.
Spend $1,000 for a nice backdrop so they could put something on Instagram after they get a medal.
Right.
Why can't we? We can. We just don't do it because no one cares enough to do it. And, you know, people do something a certain way long enough. They're like, this is the way it's always been done. And this is the way it's always going to be. And, you know, jiu-jitsu doesn't have that kind of a history in the United States. So it's all new. It's all young people. Not all young people. But it's a lot of young people. A lot of people who are coming into this world and saying, hey, there's an opportunity here. We're smart. We're capable. It's a marketable thing. There's money in it. We're going to go for it. As opposed to... You have the hobbyist judo guys who've been doing it, who work a 9-to-5, go run a dojo, always done this way, always will be this way.
Right, right.
Right, because they have that history.
Yeah.
That tradition.
Man, it is impressive how BJJ came into the spotlight and became mainstream so quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, even like the first UFC was
a
thing, right?
Right. Like it was to showcase
the world. Percentage jiu-jitsu, that was the whole thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. I loved it.
Yeah.
I watched it with great sense of pride because I did Japanese jiu-jitsu. I was like, jiu-jitsu's on the map.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
This is incredible. And I was a fan. I was a fan. I love that. You know, my mom hated it because she doesn't like violence.
Right, right, right.
I had the cassette tape and I would watch it with my dad, like, be like, yo, be on the lookout for your mother. We're like hiding and watching this thing. People, you know, Henzo punching people in the face. Like, you know, like loving it. I was like a little kid.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't have watched it as a little kid, but I did. Right?
So maybe because in other countries, you know, we'll probably dedicate another episode for this, but in other countries, it's like a lot of it is like judo is an Olympic sport. It's a state sponsor. Like it's in the education system and whatnot. So they didn't have to.
I'm not saying judo's all bad. I'm not saying that at all. Right. Yeah, you're right. It's a state sponsored. They have the pinnacle, right? It's like the Olympics. That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
It's an Olympic sport.
Right.
But in terms of like a business standpoint, a commercial standpoint in the United States, I think there's a lot of places to be improved upon. And I think we've got to borrow and learn from BJJ because they're doing a great job.
Yeah.
They're doing a great job, you know, in Niwaza.
It's
Niwaza, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Niwaza means ground lying techniques.
Yeah.
So great Niwaza, great business sense, marketing, like all those things, judo could learn from them.
Yeah.
You know, we can't do this thing of like, oh, it's judo guys, and we've been this way. And we got to innovate. We got to evolve. We got to learn.
Because, the situation in the States especially is different for judo. Like unlike other, different. Like France, Japan, Korea, Russia. They have a different.
Judo's too injury prone. It's too high impact. It's too painful. It's too risky.
Yeah.
How can you take those things away? You know, my dojo, I don't let people do Taniatoshi. How can you take out Taniatoshi? It's like, my guys do all right. We don't do Taniatoshi in the dojo. Well, black belts can do it.
Yeah.
Right?
But, you know, it's...
But after like the 37th knee injury, it's like, all right, no more Taniatoshi, please.
Right.
No more. Stop that stuff. Right? Like, how can you take out a, you know, technique from the... You got to learn, man.
Yeah.
You got to change your... You got to keep your mind open because you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And that's like my theory and philosophy on life.
Yeah.
Some people love what they know and that's all they can love. And some people love what they don't know, but you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
That's the freaking thing. It's the philosophical thing about martial arts. And that's different from sport because sport, it's another bag of things.
It's another animal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this, it's whole this, you know, we shouldn't like your experience of BJJ and judo, you know, we can all learn from each other.
Yeah.
And to make us both better. And I think this dichotomy like, oh, BJJ versus judo, it's, you know, I honestly used to look up those videos too because I thought it was really fun to watch. But now it's not really the real picture and then the purpose, but
it's never the real picture. It's never the real picture. And I think it's silly because you see this martial art versus that martial art. And I look at it and I'm like, these people aren't even in the same weight class.
Yeah.
I saw one, man. It was like Kung Fu versus MMA. And the MMA fighter had 60 pounds on the guy. And I'm like, this is not a fair fight. How is this fair in any way?
Right, right.
Right. At least keep him in the same weight class. Do weigh-ins.
Yeah.
At least have like an age range thing.
Right.
You know, like, no, this master is like 54 years old going against a 26-year-old like specimen. Like, well, how is this fair?
Yeah.
You know? It's like judo versus BJJ doing BJJ rules. The BJJ guy's going to win.
Yeah.
Judo versus BJJ, judo rules. Judo guy's going to win. You know, given that they're in the same weight class, they have the same amount of skill level in their respective sports and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? There's just too many variables to know. But, you know, it sells, right? It's you get the views. It's like
when
a judo guy meets a karate guy on the street in the back alley of the Compton, what happens next?
Yeah. Yeah. So then. But we had to remember that, you know, there's a whole context around it and, you know, we got to try to learn from each other. And, you know, it's it. and fascinating stories from the BJJ Judo BJJ circuit in New York City. So I think it's a good time to, you know, good place to end the episode. Anything to add?
Yeah, I just hope I didn't say anything too controversial. I know, because it's like there's a little bit of history between the judo and the Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, and I know jiu-jitsu is evolving really fast, and people are now saying, hey, this is not Brazilian jiu-jitsu anymore. People are saying this is American jiu-jitsu. You ever heard of this little movement?
Yeah, right? I have. Yeah.
Same with judo. People are saying this is not Japanese judo. This is freestyle judo.
Yeah.
Some people say BJJ is just Kosen judo.
Yeah.
And that really, at the end of the day, you know, we're all martial artists. We got to stick together. Yeah. Can't keep putting each other down. And we all have to have an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all have to learn and evolve together. And that's what it's about, you know?
Yeah.
And it's great. I'm loving it. And I just got to say thank you. Shout out to Brian Glick, who
is
teaching me Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I love our sessions. And, you know, I hope to make his judo spectacular, too.
Right.
Don't sleep on it. His judo's amazing.
Nice.
Right.
So I love to, you know, I've never met him before yet.
So he's great.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
So, thank you guys for listening.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, you can reach out to me on Instagram. Please follow my YouTube channel and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you could also find Peter. Right. Peter's Instagram is super personal Instagram with him and his wife and.
Yeah, well, I mean,
some babies and not even like that martial artsy, but you know, go find him, go bother him, go stalk him.
I love to hear it from you guys. You know, I try to, you know, provide as much as I can to the community. And thanks for listening, guys. And
thank you.
Stay tuned for the next episode.